WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After witnessing several terrorist attacks in his country, Sri Lanka, and losing friends and relatives to attacks, my guest Rohan Gunaratne decided to study terrorism with the hope he might help stop it. He is now research fellow at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland and honorary fellow at the International Political Institute for Counterterrorism in Israel. He's the former principal investigator of the United Nations Terrorism Prevention Branch. Gunaratne has devoted the past 5 years to studying al-Qaeda. This has included interviewing al-Qaeda members and reading hundreds of telephone, email, and other communications. He's written a new book called Inside Al-Qaeda, Global Network of Terror. I asked him how the war on terrorism has changed the structure of al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda has undergone displacement from Afghanistan. Its infrastructure in Afghanistan has suffered significantly, but its network outside Afghanistan is fully functional and fully operational.
The New York Times reported that a lot of members of Al-Qaeda had to flee Afghanistan, and they moved on to other countries. And in that sense, our job might be more difficult now in rooting them out because they're even more international and more decentralized than before. Would you agree with that?
What we are seeing is that Al-Qaeda members have not deserted from Afghanistan, but Al-Qaeda cells outside Afghanistan has become more active. That means Al-Qaeda operational and support cells in Asia, Africa, Middle East, Western Europe, and North America are continuing to operate aggressively and actively.
Do you think bin Laden is still alive?
Yes, definitely he is alive. And in fact, I would say that he is on the Afghan-Pakistan border, an area he is most familiar with, an area he has lived for more than 10 years during the anti-Soviet Afghan campaign, and an area where he enjoys significant tribal support.
How can you say that with such confidence?
It is because that is the only area he would feel safe, and that is the only area where the U.S. and the Pakistani troops cannot operate effectively. And also we know that he is alive by monitoring al-Qaeda websites as well as pro-al-Qaeda websites. And also a communique from his ally Mullah Omar, who was the head of Taliban, saying that the leader is alive.
What kind of information can you find on the al-Qaeda websites that could lead you to come to the conclusion that he's alive?
Usama bin Laden has a very specific style of writing. He uses high-style Arabic, and by reading the communiques on alnida.com website, originally hosted out of Malaysia, it is very clear that only a man like Usama can write it. And also, we have another reason to believe that he's alive. That is, Al-Qaeda released a video of a 9/11 suicide bomber called Hasnavi. And in that video, Al-Qaeda admits to having committed 9/11. And for such an important decision to be made, only a man of the stature of Usama bin Laden could take that decision. There is no one else authorized in Al-Qaeda to take that decision.
Now, on what I believe is the latest Al-Qaeda video, and I'm not sure if this is the same video that you refer to, the spokesperson says, "Our martyrs are ready for operations against American and Jewish targets inside and outside. America should be prepared. It should be ready. They should fasten their seatbelts. We are coming to them where they never expected." Is that from
Yes.
the same video?
No, it is a different video. In fact, you quoted from Al-Qaeda's newest video.
Mm.
And what is being said is by a man called Abu Gaith, who is Usama's spokesman and the head of the media committee of Al-Qaeda.
How do you interpret this message that we are coming to them where they never expected, they should fasten their seatbelts?
He's trying to drive psychological fear into the American people. And this is a technique used by many terrorist organizations. And I believe that as long as the U.S. citizens continue to maintain a high level of alertness, vigilance, and the U.S. security and intelligence community and law enforcement authorities continue to coordinate their actions, that Al-Qaeda will not be able to stage another operation of the scale of 9/11.
Gee, a lot of people would like to have your confidence about that. Why do you believe that?
It is because if we look at the post-9/11 operations by Al-Qaeda, many of those operations have failed. For instance, Al-Qaeda planned to destroy the U.S. embassy in Paris, the American Cultural Center in France, tried to poison the water supply lines to the U.S. embassy in Rome, tried to destroy U.S. warships in the Straits of Gibraltar and in Malacca, as well as try to destroy the U.S. embassy in Singapore, and also try to mount an attack on the U.S. military base in Sarajevo. They've failed. Al-Qaeda has, however, succeeded in conducting a few medium-scale attacks, such as the attack on the U.S. consulate in Karachi and the bombing of the Jerba Synagogue, which is the oldest Jewish synagogue in Africa, where 11 Germans were killed. And also Al-Qaeda conducted an operation in Karachi where 9 French naval technicians were killed. So Al-Qaeda is able to conduct tactical medium to small scale attacks, but not conduct large scale operations of the scale magnitude of 9/11, because that requires a lot of planning and preparation, during which time they can become vulnerable to detection.
There's a lot of pressure now to revamp America's intelligence agencies. What's your critique of the FBI and the CIA and their past abilities to prevent attacks and what they're doing now? What's your critique?
The CIA and the FBI failed miserably in the face of fighting Al-Qaeda. Both these agencies knew that Al-Qaeda is a group that was likely to strike the United States and would strike the United States in a way a lot of people are going to die. And they should have physically penetrated this terrorist organization without relying excessively on electronic penetration. Also, the knowledge of these two agencies of Al-Qaeda has been very weak. The CIA, for the first time, came to know the real name of Osama bin Laden's organization, the name of Al-Qaeda, only after Al-Qaeda attacked the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998. And Al-Qaeda had been functioning for 10 years before that. And these two agencies did not develop a proper understanding of this organization.
I would assume that Al-Qaeda is changing its communications techniques so that we would have more trouble cracking their codes and intercepting their messages. Is Al-Qaeda changing its communications techniques?
What we are seeing is that even in the past, it has been very difficult to detect Al-Qaeda communication. It is because Al-Qaeda uses commercially available encryption programs such as PGP, or Pretty Good Privacy. And we know that less than 5% of Al-Qaeda communication has been decoded, has been read. And of course, Al-Qaeda has long years of experience of using coded communication. If you look at Ramzi Ahmad Yusuf, the 1993 February World Trade Center bomber, he had his own laptop computer and he developed his own encryption program. Fortunately, that program had a small error and the FBI was able to decode it, but of course many months after the event. And what we are seeing is that Al-Qaeda is also using human couriers to transmit messages. And this is the most difficult form of communication that a security and intelligence agency can detect. So I think that it will be a real challenge for Western intelligence agencies to monitor Al-Qaeda communication, especially after 9/11, because Al-Qaeda is resorting to more clandestine methods of communication.
My guest is Rohan Gunaratne, research fellow at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Rohan Gunaratne, and he's research fellow at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. He is the former principal investigator of the United Nations Terrorism Prevention Branch and author of the new book, Inside Al-Qaeda, Global Network of Terror. Now, you write in your book that Al-Qaeda has forged connections with Middle Eastern terrorist groups like Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. How recent are those connections?
Al-Qaeda is a network of organizations, and Al-Qaeda attempted to penetrate Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad from about 1996. And of course, Al-Qaeda penetration of these two groups have not been all that significant compared to its penetration of, say, the armed Islamic group in Algeria or the Salafi group in Algeria or the Islamic group in Egypt or the Al-Jihad group in Egypt or the Al-Ansar Mujahideen in Chechnya. What we are seeing is, with regard to the Palestinian groups, they have tried to maintain links with Al-Qaeda but also tried to maintain a distance, because the Palestinian groups have seen that the other groups that have come into contact with Al-Qaeda has been absorbed by Al-Qaeda, such as the Egyptian organizations.
So how strong is the current connection, and what does that mean in terms of terrorist plans and types of attacks that might come in the future, and who the targets might be?
By establishing links with so many other terrorist organizations, such as the groups that I mentioned, as well as other groups in Central Asia, such as the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, and the in South and Southeast Asia, groups like Jaish-e-Mohammed, Harkatul Mujahideen, operating in Kashmir, and also groups like the Abu Sayyaf group in the Philippines. What Al-Qaeda has done is Al-Qaeda's force is multiplied several folds, and Al-Qaeda is able to operate globally by developing such connections. Also, by recruiting from 40 different nationalities in 74 countries, Al-Qaeda is able to function as a multinational organization. And Al-Qaeda has an unprecedented reach because of that. And that itself calls the international community to cooperate and coordinate their actions to fight a multinational group. No one country can fight and win against Al-Qaeda. It is the success against Al-Qaeda will depend on the willingness and the ability, especially of Western countries that have the resources and the staying power, to cooperate and work with other Asian and Middle Eastern Muslim countries.
You write a little bit in your book about bin Laden's mentor, Abdullah Azzam. You say he's also the ideological father of Al-Qaeda. Tell us something about him.
Abdullah Azzam founded Al-Qaeda. It is not Osama bin Laden who established Al-Qaeda. Abdullah Azzam also visited the United States several times, and he addressed a number of meetings in this country. He also established about 30 offices called the Afghan Service Bureau inside the United States. And it is the organization that he established, called Afghan Service Bureau, or the Maktab al-Khidmat, that evolved into Al-Qaeda after the Soviets withdrew from Afghanistan in 1989. And after some time, Abdullah Azzam came into direct conflict with Osama bin Laden, because Abdullah Azzam, what he wanted to do was primarily to fight the security forces that he perceived were attacking the Muslims unjustly. And primarily, Abdullah Azzam created the organization to fight, to conduct guerrilla warfare, not terrorism, because guerrilla warfare is primarily to attack the security forces, and terrorism is to primarily attack civilians. What happened was that Osama bin Laden disagreed with Abdullah Azzam at one point and decided to take the side of the Egyptians, who wanted to conduct terrorist attacks, especially attacks inside Egypt. And at that time, Osama bin Laden and the Egyptians decided to assassinate Abdullah Azam because they did not want, because Abdullah Azam did not want the money of Al-Qaeda, the financial resources of Al-Qaeda to be devoted to fund terrorist operations in Egypt. So in many ways, after Osama bin Laden killed his mentor and the founder of Al-Qaeda, he took over the organization and transformed the guerrilla organization into a terrorist organization.
What was the role of anti-Semitism in the original ideology of Al-Qaeda?
Very significant. In fact, Abdullah Azam is a Palestinian and lived for many years in Jordan and in Egypt. And if you look at his doctrine, his philosophy, they always had Israel as an enemy.
How much do you think Al-Qaeda's anti-Semitism is a result of its perceptions of Israel and Israel's conflict with the Palestinians, and how much of its anti-Semitism do you think precedes Israel and is just this like long festering anti-Semitism?
It is a very important question. What we are seeing is that Al-Qaeda has been able to generate significant support because of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And in fact, most amount of support Al-Qaeda has been able to generate because of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and not because of its original anti-Semitic character. And what we are seeing is that in many ways Al-Qaeda would want the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to continue so that groups like Al-Qaeda will have a steadfast flow of support even from moderate Muslims.
How did you start researching Al-Qaeda? You've been devoting the last 5 years to studying Al-Qaeda.
It is because Al-Qaeda is so different from all the other terrorist groups that we have been studying. And also Al-Qaeda is a very innovative and a creative organization. Usually terrorist organizations tend to be very conservative and traditional in the use of techniques. For instance, most groups will just do bombings, assassinations. But Al-Qaeda, we have seen, is very innovative and not an imitative organization. For instance, in August 98, Al-Qaeda did a land suicide attack against U.S. targets in Africa. In October year 2000, Al-Qaeda did a maritime suicide attack against a U.S. target in the Middle East. And on September 11th, Al-Qaeda did an airborne suicide attack against landmark targets in the United States. Al-Qaeda is also planning to conduct attacks using chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear material. So you can see it's a very creative organization. It's an organization that is at the cutting edge of terrorist technology. And this group in many ways fascinated me, and it drove me to study this organization because it's so different from all the other groups we have been studying since the contemporary wave of terrorism was the beginning of the contemporary wave of terrorism in 1968.
In your interviews with members of Al-Qaeda, have you ever interviewed somebody who had considered being a suicide bomber or was a failed suicide bomber?
Al-Qaeda is a very small organization of 3,000 members. Although Al-Qaeda has trained over 100,000 members, its membership is only 3,000. That is because you have to be invited to join Al-Qaeda. Most members of Al-Qaeda I have met, either in custody or in the open, these people have no hesitation at all of sacrificing their lives for Allah. They are ideologically convinced. They are psychologically war-trained to kill and to die. Al-Qaeda's founding charter says that Al-Qaeda member is the pioneering vanguard of the Islamist movements. They are supposed to show the way to other organizations. And that is why Al-Qaeda conducts attacks on strategic, high-profile, symbolic targets, because Al-Qaeda wants to show the way to other organizations, and Al-Qaeda members wants to kill and to die. They want to sacrifice their lives. They want to set a trend. And that is why we have to deal with this organization, because if we do not fight and destroy this organization, we will have several other organizations like Al-Qaeda that will follow Al-Qaeda.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's very nice to talk with you.
Rohan Gunaratne is research fellow at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. His new book is called Inside Al-Qaeda. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.